8. Erin Patterson took nearly 3 years to finish building her dream home on the block of land she had bought in Gibson Street, Leongatha. COVID didn't help. And then there were design issues. It appears that Erin had firm ideas on the general layout she wanted, but even she had to compromise here and there when her architect pointed out issues of structural integrity. Nonetheless, it was an achievement, and the essential bones of her initial idea survived. By late June or early July of 2022, she, Jack, and Bronte had moved in. The bedrooms and a bathroom were upstairs. The kitchen, living room, dining room, and a TV computer room were downstairs. The bush block was flat and well fenced, with a coded lock on the entry gate. It had a newly planted and landscaped garden, a dog, a goat, space. It was a family home in which she could bring up the kids and grow old gracefully. I'd take it. It'd suit me down to the ground. Jealous? You bet. A brand new million-dollar house. Missed that boat, I reckon. Looking at the evidence we were given, not a lot seemed to happen in July, August, or September of 2022. Either nothing of relevance happened or something was being hidden from us. The truth could have been either. No one said. We weren't allowed to ask. Just had to sit there and listen. Presumably during those months, Erin was busy moving in, unpacking and discovering all the little things that had slipped through the cracks. Why didn't I measure the bookcase first? And why didn't we put a PowerPoint here? That kind of stuff. Hundreds of her books remained in the garage unpacked more than a year later, along with old computers and other accumulated debris from move after move in the last few years. The kids had to settle in and figure out where to put everything in the new house. They and Erin were still going to church every second week. Don had set up the tech needed to live stream the Sunday morning services during COVID. But then Gail contracted a debilitating illness, and Erin stepped in effortlessly to manage the live stream. As Gail recovered, they rotated shifts, Don 1 week, Erin the next. It was hard to know if Erin was actually working through this period. If someone mentioned a job, I missed it. Maybe she'd enrolled in a course somewhere. It didn't really matter to the case at hand. Both she and Simon said they were getting on okay. The usual ups and downs, but nothing too drastic by their standards. In October, that changed. It was noticed by everyone. Simon, Erin, Matt, Anna, and Tanya all agreed that somewhere in that period, between October 2022 and January 2023, the nature of the relationship between Simon and Erin became colder, more distant, and nothing more than functional. Several factors contributed to the disintegration, and the decline wasn't always smooth. There were a few happy days that gave temporary hope for recovery, but they were always illusory. It was a lost cause. On the morning of Friday, the 14th of October, after a brief text exchange between Simon and Erin about what time he could pick up Bronte, Simon tapped out a quick message. "Hey, are you coming to Mum's birthday lunch at the Top Pub tomorrow with the kids? I think it's at 12:30. Gail's birthday. Simon's mum, her 70th birthday. Erin had forgotten about the birthday, damn, and now she was finding out that a special party had been organised without her. Quick to take offence at the best of times, she was instantly enraged and hurt. "I don't know knowing about your mum's birthday tomorrow," she quickly responded, garbling it a little. "Glad I asked," replied Simon. "Mum turns 70 and is keen to have something to celebrate." He quickly ran through the invitees, then added, "Dad mentioned he thought he'd asked you and you said yes. However, I mentioned it to the kids the other day and they didn't seem to have heard of it. So I wondered if Dad was confused with the Touradin arrangements the week after," which clearly he was. Erin thought this was, at best, a face-saving fudge and they had planned to cut her out, except that Simon had now put his foot in it. "I'm not too sure how your dad could have been confused what we were talking about. It's pretty obvious in this conversation," Erin sulked. In evidence, Colin, who hadn't found this exchange obvious at all, had to ask Erin which conversation she was talking about. Erin's answer was the conversation she had been having right then with Simon in the text exchange from October 2022. Right. Frankly, I was still confused. What were the Turidan arrangements anyway? No one told us. Colin just continued with the text, quoting Simon's reply. Come on, that's ridiculous. You really reckon Dad is lying? She really reckoned he was, yes. They didn't want her there. They'd made that pretty bloody obvious. I get you're mad at me, and I get why, but please consider Mum's feelings, Simon finished. Sometime between 4 and 5pm, Simon arrived at Gibson Street to pick up Bronte, and Erin let him have it. She was still feeling very hurt and wanted Simon to know it. Couldn't he see what it felt like to be cut out? But it appeared Simon wasn't interested in getting yelled at anymore, particularly over a genuine mistake. He just picked Bronte up and left as soon as he could. At least that was the impression we were left with. Soon after, Don called Erin to calm things down. He explained it was a genuine oversight and he and Gail really wanted Erin there at the celebration the next day. At 9:22pm, Erin texted Simon again. I've told your parents I'll come to the lunch and I'll bring the kids with me. Excellent. Thanks for that, Simon replied. I'll see you tomorrow. The following morning, Erin had calmed down, and at 8:35am she sent Simon another text. I'm sorry for shouting at you. I was feeling very hurt and lashed out. It's no excuse. I'd like not to do that again. And Simon echoed the sentiment. I'm sorry I raised my voice and tone too. I'd like to be more calm and listen better than I did yesterday. Colin used this episode as an example of the way Erin would fight and forgive. Fight and forgive. Respond emotionally in the heat of the moment and then settle. Yes, she was quick to anger, but also quick to reflect and apologise. This wasn't a woman who held on to anger and hatred and buried it behind a mask for months on end while she carefully planned a murder. That was ridiculous. That was his argument. A couple of weeks later, Simon drove the kids home from school and as he pulled up in the driveway, Erin came out and she said she wanted to have a chat about something. There were two versions of exactly how that chat went, depending on who was doing the telling. In Simon's universe, Erin came straight to the point. She said she discovered that my tax return for the previous financial year noted we were separated. Before that, we hadn't got the government involved in the fact we were separated. So she said that mattered. I think for the family tax benefit, and she would be obliged to claim child support off me, which had never happened before. So, yeah, she pointed that out and she was upset about it. Considering Erin's reputation for getting upset about almost anything, this sounded perfectly credible. But then Erin gave us her version. I'd been preparing to do my tax return and I asked Simon for his income to put down on my tax return and I wanted to give him mine. And out of that discussion, he told me he had put himself down as single, so that wasn't necessary anymore. And I just said words to the effect of, well, that's good, now I can claim family tax benefit. I'd been precluded from that up until then because of his high income. High income? Hadn't heard that before, but it fitted the facts. And the thing is, she continued, if you want to claim the family tax benefit and you are not partnered, Centrelink requires you to put in a child support application from the father or mother so they can assess your entitlement based on how much child support you'll be owed. So I did that. Erin did confess that she was annoyed that Simon hadn't told her he was going to put single on his tax return, and she had to find out accidentally. But to hear Erin describe her emotions, mild annoyance with people who didn't do what she expected or wanted them to do, was just her default state of existence. She wasn't upset. Not yet. Erin applied for child support on the 21st of November, and then an officer from the Victorian Government's child support program contacted Simon. standard practice, all above board. They told him that the things he had paid for in the past, according to Simon, they specifically mentioned school fees and medical bills, now had to go through child support. They would calculate what he needed to pay to child support for child support, and then child support would pay the bills Erin presented them. They were now the umpire, ensuring neither party paid too much or too little. Welcome to a social welfare state in pristine running condition. Up until that point, Simon had been paying all the school fees and the medical bills for Jack and Bronte, and the way he told it, when he received this official government advice, he just shrugged. Okay, new system, rightio, got it. Then on the 24th of November... No, wait. Before we go on, can I just say, and I think this point has to be made, I was on Erin's side here. I was looking at Simon and thinking, honey, sweetie, why didn't you call her? Given the history of your entire relationship, how did you think she was going to react to a change in the status quo that she had no control over? Couldn't you have given her a heads up? Wouldn't that have helped minimize the fallout? Did you even think of that? Hadn't her constant complaint about you for 20 years been a lack of communication? If I know men, and I don't really, I mean, yes, I've observed them in the wild and even seen a couple in captivity, which is not pretty, but still, I'm no expert. Nonetheless, let me go out on a limb, right to the end of the branch. I think it might have crossed Simon's mind to talk to her, but he knew what her reaction would be, and he was simply tired of the relentless emotional explosions. So he put it off. The next lot of school fees weren't due for ages, so he could just kick this can down the road and enjoy Christmas before facing another volcanic eruption from Erin. Unfortunately, on the 24th of November, only a day or two after this prickly exchange, Erin got a bill from an anaesthetist for upcoming surgery Jack was having on his knee. She gave it straight to Simon. Can you pay this, please? Like you always have in the past. And Simon had to say, well, no. He texted her, the Department of Human Services instructed me not to pay you anything for the kids from now on, so I can't pay, I'm afraid. It's not paying me, it's paying his anaesthetist, Erin shot back. Now Erin was upset, predictably. And it didn't help when the situation over school fees bubbled to the surface over the next 7 to 10 days. A single medical invoice was one thing, but years and years of school fees? What was Simon saying? Suddenly he wasn't going to pay them? It wasn't entirely clear what Simon was saying to Erin at this stage, even to the jury. Erin certainly believed he wasn't wanting to pay the school fees. We knew that. Erin even organised for the kids' school to split the bill and send half to her and half to Simon. But to make that legal, forms had to be signed and Simon was not going to sign. What was unclear was whether Simon was just going to wait until child support told him what he had to pay them and then let them pay the school fees, or whether he was actually trying to make Erin pay the lot. During his evidence in chief, Simon was asked, when this issue arose about Erin wanting you to pay half of the school fees, did she use the Signal chat in relation to your parents? He was referring here to the Signal messaging app that the two of them shared with his parents and other members of their family. Yes, answered Simon. After I'd responded and said that it wasn't appropriate for me to pay that separately to the child support arrangements, she messaged. Well, she addressed it to Mum and Dad, but I was part of the group, and I guess complained about the fact I wasn't going to pay half the school fees. On the other hand, when Erin was giving evidence, she was asked, what was Simon's attitude to paying school fees at this time? He wanted me to pay all of them from now on. To be fair to Simon, based on what we were hearing, that didn't quite seem to be the case. But it's certainly what Erin thought, and she quickly involved his parents, Don and Gail. We are now in early December 2022, and Erin is messaging all of them in the Signal group, Simon, Don, and Gail. Around the 4th of December, Don had called Erin trying to calm the farm, as he always did. We weren't told what he'd said on the phone, but Erin had reflected on his comments and was still far from happy. "I'm sorry, but I can't stop thinking about the comment that Don made on the phone," she messaged to the group through Signal. "It seems to be that cancelling the school fees has been a punishment to me for claiming child support, which is unconscionable. Both parents have a duty to financially support the children they made." Don replied, "Sorry, I may have misled you, Erin. I regret possibly making a false representation of Simon's opinions. That's why I immediately withdrew it." "Thanks, Don," Erin replied. "I understand your position and that you and Gail don't want to be involved in certain aspects of these difficulties, as it's uncomfortable and awkward." But she continued to lay out a number of concerns and ended with, "I will relay here further communication about the children's schooling, as that is a very big issue. I have had a number of conversations with the school, Centrelink, and the Child Support Agency about that. Simon seems to be under the misapprehension that a child support assessment covers every expense for the children under the sun. That's just not the case. It covers basic care and basic schooling, including a public school education. So our choice is either to tell the school we'll each be responsible for the account, or if Simon doesn't want to do that and wants me to be responsible for 100%, then my options are to either take the children out of school or seek a court order requesting Simon pay 50%. It never was entirely clear what Erin was really trying to achieve by involving Don and Gail. Even under cross-examination, she couldn't really explain it properly. She strenuously denied she wanted them to force their son to pay 50% of the school fees. Don and Gail had even said if money was the issue, they'd pay the school fees. For Erin, however, that wasn't the crux of the problem. It was never really about the bucket of dollars needed. It was about Simon's behaviour. What she was hoping Simon's parents would do, as far as we could tell, was clip Simon over the ear and tell him to wake up and stop being a prick. She figured that if Simon knew that his parents knew how disgracefully he was behaving, then he might stop behaving that way. Sadly, Don and Gail, probably in good faith, kept believing Erin wanted them to adjudicate a conflict and make a declaration that Simon would abide by. To do that, however, they wanted to hear and understand both sides of the argument. But Simon kept telling them it was between him and Erin, and that the two of them would sort it out. So Don had to tell Erin that, because Simon would not tell them his side of the story, they couldn't help. Erin bit her lip. "Thanks for your message, Don. I acknowledge what you said about being unable to adjudicate. I also said perhaps a dozen times yesterday that I'm not asking you to adjudicate or take sides. I know you'll support your son no matter what he does. I wouldn't expect anything different." Ouch. "All I wanted was for you to be aware of what's going on and to care about what's going on, and to care and perhaps encourage Simon to do the right thing by his children. However, if you don't want to get involved even to that extent, I respect that, and I will find a way to manage this situation on my own. Thanks for listening yesterday. Love, Erin." Later in the trial, Nanette Rogers would accuse Erin of being two-faced, of presenting as a grateful, appreciative in-law and saying and doing things to project that image, while her real thoughts and feelings were much more aggressive and bitter. To a degree, of course, that describes all of us, doesn't it? We have a public face and a private face. If we're in a couple, how we relate to our partner when we're among friends is rarely how we relate to them when it's just the two of us and one of us forgets to pay that parking fine which just went up by $65. The last straw, the one that triggers the final blow-up, is always so tiny. As a species, I sometimes wonder if we aren't trapped between a freakish evolution of intellect and an ancient instinct for violence. Way back, that aggressive instinct was essential for our preservation. But now that we have supermarkets, air conditioning, and filtered water, All it can do is find a dark corner of the soul where it can unearth small issues to agitate for, somewhere. I used to punch the wall. I even broke the gyprock. Erin signed off her message to Don with, "Love, Erin." Yes, it had been strident, but she was making a stand. She was also building the edifice, protecting the shrine. She was a member of the family. Ultimately, they were all one big social unit and still loved each other. She was signalling to them that despite the anger, she still felt she belonged. She wanted to belong. She needed a family. Around the same time, however, Erin also posted a string of messages to her group of Facebook girlfriends. Here was her second face. She had been keeping them abreast of developments. Her first message was sent at 10:19 a.m. on the 6th of December. Simon's dad contacted me this morning to say that he and Gail had tried to talk to Simon about the matters I raised and to get his side, but he refused to talk about it other than to signal he disagreed with what I said. Beyond that, he won't talk about it. So Don said they can't adjudicate if they don't know both sides, and Simon won't give his side. Frustrated emoji. So he said all that he can ask is that Simon and I get together to pray for the children. Emoji, emoji. This family, I swear to fucking God. She continued at 10:27 a.m. I said to him about 50 times yesterday that I didn't want them to adjudicate. Emoji. Nobody bloody listens to me. At least I know they're a lost cause. And at 10:38 a.m. I wonder if they've got any capacity for self-reflection at all. I mean, clearly the fact that Simon refuses to talk about personal issues in part stems from the behaviour of his parents and how they operate. According to them, they have never asked him what's going on with us, why I keep kicking him out. It's too awkward or uncomfortable or something. So that's his learned behaviour. Just don't talk about this shit. And finally, at 10:44 a.m, Don rang me last night to say that he thought there was a solution to all this if Simon and I get together and try to talk and pray together. Pray? Like that'll solve it? Erin threw in another couple of emojis here, again, and I don't blame her. I know she thinks that's nonsense. She's not a Christian. Will you stop with the bullshit? And then he also said Simon had indicated there was a solution to the financial issues if I withdraw the child support claims. My head nearly exploded and I was like, what? And Don goes, oh, sorry, just ignore what I said. I don't want to get involved. So anyway, I sent a group message last night to tell them all how Simon is behaving is unconscionable and asking me to withdraw the child support claim is wrong and disadvantages me and his children and how dare he, etc. Don messaged to say he and Gail don't want to get involved in the financial things, but just hope we will pray, emoji again, for the kids. So I replied this morning saying I know it's uncomfortable and awkward for them, but I want to copy them into this stuff because Simon needs to be accountable for the decisions he is making that are hurting his children, and I would hope they care about their grandchildren enough to care about what Simon is doing. That's when Don said they tried to talk to him, but he refused to talk about it, so they're staying out of it, but they want us to pray together. Later, Erin would wave all this aside as just a vent. And on the surface, it is, but I'm sick of this shit. I want nothing more to do with them. I thought his parents would want to do the right thing, but it seems their concern about not wanting to feel uncomfortable and not wanting to get involved in their son's personal matters are overriding that, so fuck 'em. The following morning, the venting to her Facebook friends continued. His parents sent me a message yesterday afternoon and Simon sent me one last night, but I've read neither and don't think I will. I don't want to hear it. Simon's will just be horrible and be gaslighting and abusive and it will ruin my day. And his parents would just be more weasel words about not getting involved, so I think I'm just going to move on. I don't need anything from any of these people. They've had Simon for tea every night for 3 months and never once picked up the phone to me since the separation and asked if I'm okay and need help, so that tells me their choices. Less than a week later, Erin took Jack and Bronte on a 4-week summer holiday to New Zealand. It was the first time they had been on a big family holiday without Simon. In that December of 2022, they had indeed all faced some big choices, including Erin. To an outside observer, it would seem that the heat from this confrontation would come off the boil through January, and Colin Mandy would have us believe it was merely another example of Erin's capacity to fight, then forgive. But it was also the end of the relationship. Choices had been made.